This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Glad you could join me this week because we have a terrific show lined up for you. Eddie Hearn, Matchroom Boxing USA, the lead promoter there, he joins me, and we talk about all things going on in the Matchroom world, from the fight with Demetrius Andrade this weekend to what's going on right now with Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz. That rematch, of course, expected to take place later on this year. Some of the guys that Eddie is looking to sign, he has some interesting thoughts on that, plus everything happening with the Canelo Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin stuff, the latest. We chat about that during this show. A little bit later on, Joseph Parker, the former heavyweight champion, he returns to the ring and returns to the U.S. this weekend when he faces Alex Liepai. Parker trying to get back on the heavyweight title track. He joins me for a really interesting conversation a little bit later on in the show. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcast, also known as iTunes, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Eddie Hearn. All right, joining me now on the podcast from Providence, Rhode Island, the site of Demetrius Andrade's upcoming WBO middleweight title defense, Eddie Hearn. Eddie, thanks for joining me again, man.
Thank you, Chris. It's an interesting place. I had a little stroll around today.
You just got in like an hour ago.
I know. I was in LA and I went on a red eye. And I know it sounds bad saying there was no flatbeds on the plane, but there was no flatbeds on the plane. And for anyone listening to this, I am 6'5" and it was a red eye and it was brutal. But it's good for the soul, I think, things like that, you know? Always, every now and again, I like to throw in a little long haul economy flight because I think it just keeps you grounded. I can't walk when I get off the other end. But I think it keeps me grounded.
Keeps you grounded. I was going to ask you about that. Like, you're promoting a lot of fights in the UK. You're back here, you know, a couple times a month at least fighting the US. How has the schedule been for you? I mean, it seems like you're going from one spot to another, promoting another big event.
Yeah, pretty brutal. I mean, also this Friday night, we're in Milan for our DAZN Italy shows, which is really starting to get momentum as well, you know, in a big arena for the first time in Italy. So it's very taxing on the mind, the body as well, family life, of course. But, you know, the main thing is to make sure that you don't lose focus in certain markets. Like, we get a little bit of criticism at the moment saying, oh, like the British fans, Hearn, you're a sellout. You're in America all the time, you know, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, obviously, it's a big deal for us that we've got over here. And whilst we're not neglecting the UK market, we also have to follow the changes and the turns in the global market. And what we've seen in the last year is a heavy investment in US boxing. So obviously that's a place where we have to focus a lot of our attention. Just learning, really. Like, again, coming to places like this is so different to the UK, because every place we come to, it's like a different country. You know, like Rhode Island compared to LA, it's just like different, completely different. On July 27, we're in Texas, in Dallas. It's our first show in Texas. So it's really an eye-opener, and I'm learning so much every week. We're miles away from getting it right. But, you know, this week we'll have 6,000 in the Dunkin' Donuts. Philadelphia show, good crowd. Like, just there's a few signs. Obviously, Joshua Ruiz was huge for our image in America, although we didn't win, which was a bit of a kick in the nuts. But I just feel like we're starting to get a little bit of momentum now. We've got to develop our brand name, you know. In the UK, we do have the benefit of Matchroom and Eddie Hearn shows. Like, you go to them almost before you even know what the card is. It's a bit like UFC. And I think Top Rank have that a little bit over here as well. So we have to develop that. And we have to get the trust of fight fans to know that we deliver quality. And I think we've been doing that.
How have you found you started the shows in October of this past year with this new DAZN deal. Has it been what you've expected, you know, promoting consistently in the US?
I probably didn't expect other broadcasters and promoters to step up as aggressively financially as they did. And, you know, obviously we came in with a huge impact of the biggest deal in boxing history, and we shouted about it because that was a calculated decision. It wasn't just being brash and coming in saying, You know, a lot of people said, maybe you should have just sort of tiptoed in. That's not our style. That's not a promotional style. You know, you want to make some noise. You've got to come in with the truth. So we did that, and ESPN stepped right up to the plate. Fox, or particularly PBC, stepped right up to the plate, matching offers, overpaying fighters, which we're all doing. Great news for the fighters. And I do feel now there's a little bit of consolidation. But I think everybody's starting to look at the industry and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's just calm down here. We need to be paying the right money, making the right moves. I think that the impact that DAZN and Matchroom have had has been sensational. I don't think every show's been sensational, but I think the short-term impact has been incredible. Mm. And obviously coupled by DAZN's investment in Canelo separately to Matchroom Boxing and the Golden Boy deal and Gennady Golovkin, but also with, you know, Anthony Joshua, with Usyk, with all these guys. I mean, when you look at our stable now, I was just on our website the other day, just surfing through some stuff, and I was looking at our stable, and like US and UK, it's the strongest worldwide stable, unquestionably, in boxing. So I'm proud of what we're doing. I wish there was more hours in the day, because there's so much to do, so much to do. Like, after here, I'd really like to go down to Dallas for 3 or 4 weeks and just work on the ground there. That's how you penetrate these markets. You know, this is a Providence, beautiful place, but strange place. You know, when you walk out there, it's like, you start to realise that social media impact and strategies like that may not have the same impact here that they would have in New York or LA. And this feels like the kind of place where you need to be on the ground. You know, you need to be hustling the bars, the restaurants, the different communities, the clubs. Mm. So, and that's just about manpower, but it's something that I would like to do if I had more hours in the day. So not easy to balance all the time. But certainly starting to understand things a lot more over here.
You talked about the size of the deal and how you guys did come out and kind of shout from the rooftops and it being a calculated decision. In the aftermath of you doing that, a lot of promoters would tell me, well, it's not really an 8-year deal. Eddie's got to meet certain numbers to get there. How have you found, I mean, do you still feel like this is an 8-year deal that everyone's on the same page with that?
We're partners with DAZN. You know, we've been long-term partners with DAZN and Perform for a long time. We know what the strategy is. There's no we have to hit certain numbers in a deal at all. You know, will they change their strategy on boxing moving forward one day and make a smaller investment into boxing and a bigger investment into American football or NHL or NBA? Possibly. But we know what we're doing. We know where the investment lies. And it's not just a US investment. You know, it's Italy, it's Spain, it's Japan, it's all the other DAZN territories as well. But I think every other promoter was very quick to say, in a British term, is poo-poo the deal, where it's like, nah, the money's not real. I mean, they were being told that in 6 months, DAZN would be out of business, they wouldn't be able to pay anyone. It's absolute rubbish. But I would probably tell them the same thing if the shoe was on the other foot. So I can't blame the top ranks and the PBCs of this world. Where we are on the back foot is we don't have the exposure potential of a ESPN or a Fox. It's common sense. But what we do have is very bright people who look outside of the box. And in this modern day world, it's not just about hitting numbers on linear. Like, if you look at it, like Terence Crawford and Vasily Lomachenko and people like that, they've hit good numbers on ESPN. What has it actually translated to? Has it translated to increased gate revenue? No. Has it translated to increased pay-per-view revenue? No. So it's all very well saying, oh, X many people watch this, but if you're not monetizing it, if there's no strategy behind it, what does it matter if you're doing 1 million or 400,000 or 500,000? It's what you're doing around it. It's the promotional machine of your promotional company. It's social media, it's digital content, it's 40 days. You know, it's this, it's a big job. And the people are sometimes deluded by the potential reach of other spheres, if you like. You know, they just say, oh, we did, I see it all the time, we did 1.4 million on ESPN. Okay, so what? You know, that's great. I'm not knocking it. Good news. But what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Nothing. So there's a whole new world out there, and streaming and digital content, and that's where we feel like we're at the forefront of that. So we're just starting now to really understand what we want. We have to look at our stable, our commitment to fighters, bringing new fighters in. We're getting more interest now about fighters wanting to join Matchroom than we've had since we started, which is a bit frustrating because we can't take them all on. Mm-hmm. But I also feel that our investment in young fighters is important as well. You know, I feel like we have the best stable of young fighters globally. That's not something that's going to materialize for two, three, four years, but it's important to the development of Matchroom Boxing USA. And of course, we're involved in a very aggressive heavyweight landscape of which we are major players in, not just with Anthony Joshua, but with our entire stable of heavyweights.
All right, let's talk about the heavyweights. And the best exposure that DAZN got was off the Joshua Ruiz fight. That was everywhere on social media, on YouTube, all the clips. Not great for you in that moment, you know, for the exposure of DAZN. But where do we stand as we sit here on June 28th with the rematch between Joshua and Ruiz?
Well, one thing we know is happening. I mean, and there's, you know, a lot of people, it makes me laugh where people now, I was reading, I think, Tyson Fury interview, they threw Joshua to the lions with Andy Ruiz. I mean, the guy was like an 8-1 underdog. And
bigger,
everyone was calling it a mismatch before the fight. Now, we apparently threw Anthony Joshua, this beast of Andy Ruiz, who no one particularly rated hugely before the fight. Now everyone thinks he's the second coming of Mike Tyson. So, which is good for Andy Ruiz. So, a lot of people are now saying as well, I wouldn't go straight into the rematch. You know, I think he needs a couple of fights back, et cetera, et cetera. I agree with you, right? In an ideal world, Joshua would go away now. He'd have a couple of wins to get the confidence back. Then sometime next year, he's not interested in that. And this is the only opportunity he's going to get to fight Andy Ruiz again and win his belts back. So he's going to take it. And it's a massive risk.
Mm-hmm.
Massive risk. But isn't that what you want? Boxing fans are like really unique in that they sort of moan about something, and when you do the opposite, they still moan about it. So it's like, you know, he shouldn't go into the rematch. Like, don't you want thrilling fights, edge of your seat fights that you just do not know what's going to happen, where everything is on the line? Because that's what you're going to get in this rematch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited. I mean, this is what we live for. You know, I was scared in the first fight. This is why I'm going to be petrified. So it's just really the decision now. We've had six countries come on, offer us huge site fees. I can never tell you it's not about the money, but this is a bit more important than that. You know, this is about getting it right. This is about winning this fight. I feel like it's between the UK and MSG. I think the training team, I think any sensible person taking everything else out of the mix would say doing it in the UK would be a better advantage for Anthony Joshua. I think that's common sense. There's more money in America. There's probably more prestige. It's a bigger story. I mean, if he beats Ruiz at Madison Square Garden, he just becomes an overnight global sensation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but there is risk in that. So there's all these things. Ultimately, as always, despite, again, what people think, Anthony Joshua, I spoke to him 10 minutes ago. I said, you're going to have a very difficult decision to make in the next 48 hours. Because I'm going to lay it all on a bit of paper for you, and I'm going to say, this is what it looks like. What do you want to do?
So that's what it's going to come down in the next 48 hours. Are you going to sit down with him when you get back to the...
No, we don't need to. I spoke to him. I spoke to Rob McCracken. I spoke to Freddie Cunningham, who's his sort of business guy. And it's like there's no one saying, we have to do it here. You know, some people are saying, I'd prefer to do it here. Some people are saying, I think it makes more business sense to do it here. But as always, Anthony will decide. At the moment, frustratingly, he is saying, I really don't care, wherever you want. But that's what he always does. But he's going to have to be the one that takes the responsibility and says, no, okay, there. Because once we decide, no one can be held accountable but Anthony, because he's the boss. He's the one who's going to make the decisions. I really don't know, is the answer. November the 29th, which is a Friday night.
Day after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
In the US.
You know, I think DAZN look at that date and say that's a massive weekend for sport, you know, in terms of a clear schedule, be a huge event in New York, or December the 7th in New York, or December the 14th in Cardiff. I mean, you know, those three weekends is where we're down to at the moment.
And you think it'll be decided by Monday?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, contractually, we also have to let people know within certain periods. And it's gone on a long time now, you know, and it's not because he's thinking about whether he's going to do it or not. Just wanted to leave him alone, to be honest with you. I mean, you don't see it over here, but like probably five times more people are talking about Anthony Joshua now than they were before the Ruiz fight. And he lives in this world of noise. You know, I saw him the other day, and it's almost like he don't... like, leave me alone kind of thing. Not in a bad way, just like, guys, like we're talking about, do we bring something into camp? Where do we do the rematch? When do we start camp? Like all these things. And he's like, all right, you guys talk about that. I'm going on holiday, right, to clear my mind. But one thing I have noticed with him, after a good few weeks of, not depression, but, you know, he kicked himself hard because he's a winner. Just now, like, okay, I see him out training a couple of days ago. You'd have seen it on his Instagram. He knows where he needs to improve. And I think you'll see a completely different fighter in the rematch. Mm-hmm. Not saying he definitely wins the rematch, but you will see a completely different fighter. Someone that just felt before that things, you know, you just win. You know, you turn up and you win.
Mm-hmm. What have your communications been like with the Ruiz camp? Because, you know, every day there's a new headline of, I want the fight in Mexico. Yeah, I want $50 million. Do you feel like you're on the same page with him and his team?
Yeah, contractually we are. And the people who are behind him in that respect know exactly where we are with it. I mean, you've got a few different, you know, you've got Tom Brown, the promoter. You've got Al Heyman, the advisor. And then you've got Andy Ruiz and his friends and family. So, you know, Al and Tom know exactly what they signed up to and what Andy signed up to personally. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's like anything in these kind of situations. Before the fight, it was, oh, well, if I get the rematch for that number, wow, I mean, I'd be world champion, I'd be over the moon. Mm-hmm. Now it's, whoa, hang on a minute, I called a shot. You know, it doesn't really work like that, especially in law. So it's more a case of, look, guys, well done. We gave you this massive opportunity. You know what you're obligated to do. And by the way, in the rematch, it's not like, you ain't going to make a potload of money. Mm. But what you have to do is, you have to beat Anthony Joshua again, and then off you go, over to Fox or over to wherever you want to go. Congratulations, you deserve it. You know, we lost, you won. Mm-hmm. But this is what you're obligated to do. So we don't expect any problems in that respect. Obviously, he'd much rather have the fight in the US than the UK. But again, you know, that first fight was in the US. AJ would be well within his rights to do the fight in the UK. And at this moment, I honestly couldn't tell you which way it's going to go, even though we will make a decision in the next couple of days. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the fight you have this weekend. Demetrius Andrade, when you signed him, you promised to keep him busy, and you have. He's been a very active middleweight champion. But as you keep progressing, you're looking for the big fight out there for him. What is the big fight for Demetrius Andrade? Because as we speak, I've been reporting on this, Canelo Golovkin is having problems right now. I don't know if that'll be made for the fall. In fact, I don't think it will be made for the fall. But where do you slot Andrade in the next 6 to 8 months?
So I think that we're not just looking for the big fight. We're looking for the big performance. There's no secret in boxing. And, you know, we were just talking about it off recording that everybody thinks that Demetrius Andrade is the most skillful and potentially the best 160-pounder in the world. But in the performances so far, I've seen a guy who's levels above his opposition, but I haven't yet seen the performances that have left me going, he 100% beats Canelo and Golovkin. I know he can beat them, but I think they're very, very difficult fights. Having seen what I've seen so far, he's always struggled with activity. This is his third fight in 8 months, and it's the perfect fight for him. You know, in the respect that finally you've got someone who comes to fight in Sulecki. You know, gave Danny Jacobs a great fight, had a fight of the year victory against Rosado, you know. And actually, without getting dropped in that fight, you'd probably give him a lot more chance in this fight than you do after that. But this is a guy who's going to come to win, who's going to be very aggressive. And this is like the breakout fight. This is on your home turf. We'll have 6,000 or 7,000 people. There hasn't been a world championship fight for 26 years in Providence. This is his chance to shine. And this is a chance to make a statement, to come out of this fight, get victory and say, I want Canelo. I want the undisputed middleweight championship. And, you know, that's why Demetrius getting that belt was so important, because with that belt, he is the final link of the undisputed middleweight world championship. And I think Canelo and Golovkin will be watching very closely this Saturday, because they may have a decision to make, either of them, in the next 2 weeks maybe, where Demetrius may be an option. And if probably he would do himself a favour not to look too good on Saturday night, because if he looked great, he may not get the fight. He's kind of like the bogeyman, isn't he, of the division, where I think generally fighters and trainers go, no, I'm not fighting Andrade. I've heard it 100 times from people I represent as well, not just from guys we're trying to fight. So this is a big moment for him, a big moment, because I really feel like he can announce himself, you know, amongst those guys, and he's right in the mix for those guys.
Have you conveyed that, the need to kind of be spectacular? Mm. Like, I had him on the show, the post show we did after the Golovkin fight, and I asked him, I said, do you need to not just win, but win convincingly, win in a, you know, highlight reel type of style? He didn't seem to think that was...
Well, he's an interesting individual, isn't he? He's like, he doesn't really get... He's a very laid back guy. He doesn't get overly pumped about much. But I just keep telling him, all you got to do is keep winning and you're going to land one of these monster fights. He should know enough about the sport, enough about entertainment, enough about promotion to know that a good performance and a sensational performance works wonders. Mm-hmm. And it will do here. Because if he goes in and does a job on Sulecki, he should be calling those names, and he will be calling those names. If it's a lackluster performance, if it's not particularly exciting, he can call the names, but there won't be a response from the public. That's what he needs. He needs the public to say, we want that fight. We want the undisputed championship. Because every champion should look to become undisputed. You're only one fight away in the middleweight division. And I know that Canelo is about legacy. He's about challenges. And I know he'd like to be the undisputed champion. So I think, like I said, everyone will be watching. I believe Eddie Reynoso is coming on Saturday, working for some Latin American broadcasters, but also having a close look, because I think we're at decision time. You know, if you're going to be fighting in September, you need to decide in the next 2 weeks who you're fighting. And that's the issue Canelo has now, is who are they going to fight? You know, is it going to be Golovkin? Is it going to be Kovalev? Could it be Callum Smith? Could it be Demetrius Andrade? I think all those guys are in the mix. But
have you been contacted about Callum Smith?
Not really, no. I mean, we've made it clear that he's good to go for that date. I've got to say, Chris, I don't think they'll be queuing up to fight Callum Smith. I mean, I know Canelo has a huge pair of cojones. You know, he likes to talk about Kovalev. Callum Smith's a different kettle of fish. Not just that, I mean, Kovalev's 175. Callum Smith is huge. I mean, they didn't really feel comfortable with the size difference in the Rocky Fielding fight. But Callum is bigger, wider, and better. You know, and I don't, the feeling I get from the camp is that they like to talk about Callum Smith, but actually, would they take that fight? Mm. And Callum Smith's sort of developing a good reputation now as being a real, I wouldn't even say dark horse anymore, because a lot of people are talking about him, but the 168 guy, and a guy that could cause a lot of people problems. I mean, again, Golovkin against Callum Smith, great fight. You know, Canelo against Callum Smith, great fight. For me, knowing what I know internally and knowing what I've listened to from you and other people reporting, sounds like the Kovalev fight is the fight that Canelo wants. And it's an intriguing fight. You know, you can't moan about that fight, can you? We all want the Triple G fight. That's the fight. Probably the biggest fight in boxing outside of Joshua Ruiz. But, you know, I think the Kovalev fight is intriguing. But Top Rank and ESPN would be giving up a champion. And I'm not sure money talks, but, you know, and we're running out of time. And he's got a mandatory fight due in Russia against Anthony Yard. So a lot of moving parts. This is actually one I'm pleased I'm not in. You know, I can just look at it and go, oh, I bet they're having nightmares, everybody. So it's boxing. It's why we love it.
A couple of things I want to hit you on. Speaking of undisputed, you have the undisputed women's 135-pound champion in Katie Taylor. Terrific fight against Delphine Persson. Talk of a rematch. Where do you stand with Katie after that fight?
She's always super critical of herself. She felt she did enough to win the fight. She asked me straight after, what's the general consensus? I said everyone thought it was close. I said a lot of people thought Persson won the fight. A lot of people thought it was a draw. Some people thought you won. I have to be honest with you, like, and you can see that on social media. It's not like, you know, she said then we should do that fight again. Now, if there's any doubt, I want to do that fight again. There's things that I want to make sure are in place for that rematch that I wasn't happy about going into that fight. But when you look at the lightweight division and the future for Katie Taylor, what are the big fights for her? Amanda Serrano, the Delphine Pursoom rematch, Cecilia Breakhouse, maybe at a 140 catch weight. You know, that's kind of it, you know. And she's about legacy. She's about challenges. She will 100% rematch Delphine Pursoom. Will it be next? I don't know. I mean, the Amanda Serrano fight is an interesting fight. I would love her to take that fight.
And well, let me ask you about that, too, because Lou DiBella was on the podcast last week, and he kind of articulated some of the financial issues that Amanda's been having, or her team maybe has been having with the deal you signed. They signed a co-promote with you. She was fought in January, and now...
Yeah, I mean, look, this is like... I don't mind it. I've kept my mouth shut for a long time on this on social media, and I've had to bite my tongue. It's very simple. We signed a promotional deal with Lou DiBella, Amanda Serrano, to co-promote Amanda Serrano. All the numbers of that deal were in a contract. The first fight in New York, another fight, and then the Katie Taylor fight. All the numbers were in there. It wasn't like to be agreed. It was contracted and signed. Okay? So then it comes out that Amanda Serrano actually hasn't seen this contract, and Lou DiBella signed it, and now I'm like expected to give her a second fight where she's coming out. This all started, she came out on Twitter and said, I will fight Katie Taylor if the money's right. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute, I've got a contract with you. So she's like, well, I never signed a contract. I'm like, you might want to speak to Lou DiBella. So like, if this was someone I disliked, Lou DiBella would have a major problem. But we'll work it out, and I'm not looking to cause any problems, but Amanda Serrano's out there, this is ridiculous. This has been signed on my business. No, your promoter signed it. They own your promotional rights. You're signed to fight Katie Taylor. So I'm not giving you another fight. I didn't want to give you the first fight, but now I'm giving you that fight and another fight, and then you get to the Katie Taylor fight, and you go, no, actually, I don't want it. So you can have the second fight, but you've got to fight Katie Taylor. If you want more money, we'll talk about it. But don't forget, you know, your promoter signed a contract for those three fights. So, yeah, it's been an interesting few exchanges. And again, like if I wasn't as laid back as I am, I would have a major legal problem with it. But I'll let Lou get away with this one, as he's my friend.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, you were spotted sitting next to Mikey Garcia at a recent fight. I don't know if it's official yet that he's fighting Danny Garcia, but... Where do you stand with Mikey Garcia at this point? Because so, I've heard some stuff about maybe that fight winding over at DAZN.
So, I've got a great relationship with Mikey Garcia. I love spending time with him. I think he's extremely bright. And we always laugh because he was the first person that I sat down with back in May or June last year, right? And asked for a meeting with him. I flew to LA. We met in... I think the Sheraton by the airport there at LAX. And I just remember, like, I'm pitching him hard, right? And he's looking at me thinking, who are you and who are DAZN? Like, this guy, like, he's... And I've got to say, it's one of my strong pitches, right? I went in there, I was like... And I left the meeting going, and we got on really well, and I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to sign Mikey Garcia. We got quite close, and he was like, look, I don't really know about DAZN. Like, what is it? I want to see it. And obviously, as we've progressed, particularly with a Canelo signing, you know, then we had another fight, another meeting. And actually, before the Errol Spence fight, he nearly joined then. And now we're talking again. So it's always a possibility that Mikey Garcia ends up on DAZN because he's open-minded, he's contractually free. If he gets offered, you know, Mikey Garcia is going to go where the best deal for Mikey Garcia is. It's very simple. And if you can offer him that, you get him. So if we can offer him that, we get him. He's a big draw. He's a great fighter. He's crazy. I mean, this isn't a guy, you know, we're offering him a lot of money. He could, if he wants, have quite an easy fight. He don't want an easy fight. He wants to fight Errol Spence again. Mm. You know, I want that fight again.
I don't know why he keeps... The welterweight thing just doesn't really...
No, I mean...
He's a great fighter, yeah. But... You know, like there's weight classes for a reason.
I mean, yeah. I like him against, obviously his brother trains Ramirez, but I like him against the Ramirez Hooker winner, particularly if it's Maurice Hooker. I like him in all fights at 140. I don't mind the Danny Garcia fight. I think it's a good fight. It's quite interesting. It's not really for anything, but it's an interesting fight. Me and Mikey talk all the time, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him on DAZN. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him on a Fox pay-per-view against Danny Garcia. So whatever makes sense for Mikey Garcia, he's going to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Eddie, appreciate it. Good luck this weekend with Demetrius. I think it's going to be a fun fight.
So
I think it's a chance for Demetrius to look good
and
a guy that's going to want to fight him.
And a guy who is desperate in Sulecki. Mm-hmm. I love making fights like this where you know the challenger is a genuine guy who is desperate to win. Mm-hmm. Desperate. And he'll try and try and try. And he'll be in Demetrius's face. And there's no excuses for Demetrius not to look good in this fight. But a lot will come down to heart. You know, sometimes we haven't really seen Demetrius's heart or chin tested too much because it's never really been called into question. Mm-hmm. I think we might just see it called into question on Saturday night.
Should be good. Eddie, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Coming up, my conversation with Joseph Parker.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, he is the former heavyweight champion of the world. He returns to the ring in the U.S. on Saturday night, facing Alex Liepaja, Joseph Parker. Joe, what's going on, man?
It's good to be here at Providence. I've got family and friends and the team here. I've actually had a great training camp in Las Vegas preparing for this fight. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to putting everything that I've practiced on display come fight night.
I saw you at the press conference. I'm always amused by these stare downs and like what guys are thinking. Like what goes through your mind when you have to do this manufactured photo shoot?
I mean, I'm just looking straight at his eyes and, you know, he was a bit smiley today, but I guess I'm just trying to, trying to get some fear into him, trying to look staunch.
Have you ever, have guys tried stuff with you in the past during stare downs?
Yeah, I mean, Dillian White, when we had the stare down, he got his tummy on me, and our tummies wasn't really a good sight to see. And then, you know, putting his nose into mine, so sort of had a, you know, but I think he's just trying to get the better of me, but you just got to stay relaxed in those situations.
Is there anything you can learn about a guy in a situation like that, looking into his eyes?
Sometimes you can see if they're nervous or not, or if they're prepared, you know, sometimes you can pick up on that. Mm-hmm.
So here you are fighting in the U.S. Been a few years since you fought in the U.S. This is your first fight with Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, your new promotional deal with them. Why did you make the decision to move over to Matchroom and start a new chart, kind of a new course for your career?
Yeah, I had a contract with Duco Events, a six-year contract that finished at the beginning of the year. And we had a very, you know, successful partnership where we achieved a lot together, you know, being champion of the world, fought many fights. And when our contract finished, we sort of stood back and sort of examined the scene in the boxing world, the promoters. We got offers from all around the world, you know, Bob Arum, Eddie Hearn, and Al Haymon. But we saw that as a team, we thought that, Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, the Zone, were the best to link up with, you know, stable of fighters being open in the US and UK market. So we thought, you know, I sort of made the decision to sign with them, and then I got the blessing of my team, and you know, here we are.
Did you feel like you needed a change, something to change in your career?
I felt like it was a good time to make a good change. And if we wanted to fight the best in the world and the guys that are in the same stable, then it's obviously it was a good time sort of decision to sign off with you.
For you, 2018 was an interesting year because you had a world championship, you had a huge fight against Anthony Joshua, you lost the decision there. And then you came back 4 months later and fought Dillian White, which a lot of guys don't do. Like a lot of guys, after a loss like you had against Joshua, you'll see them take two or three lower level fights. You jump right back in 4 months later. When you look back at that decision, do you wish you did anything differently in that moment?
You know, it was like you said, not many fighters do it. And as a team, we don't shy away from challenges. And when we were given the opportunity, we sat down as a team and discussed. And we wanted it. You know, we wanted to fight Dillian White. We respected him as a fighter. And so we thought it was pretty much if we fought him and beat him, you know, we would have been elevated to the top again very fast. But we took that opportunity and obviously we lost the fight. And no, I wouldn't change, you know, I've learned a lot from those two losses. And I feel like as a fighter now, I'm a lot more mature. And now I'm actually keeping in shape when I'm at home. And I think that's a great start in showing that I really want to be champion again.
So you said you're more mature after those two losses. What else is different about you? What else do you kind of learn after you take back-to-back losses for the first time in your career?
You learn what kind of fighter you are, and you learn there's different things that you can do in camp. And also, when you know that you've fought the top in the world and you're at that level, you get a lot of confidence. And so I know I belong at the top, and I've taken, you know, sort of with the two losses, I'm down here a bit and I have to climb back to the top, but I know I belong there.
What was the tougher one to take, the Joshua loss or the White loss for you?
The I think the weight loss, because I know I can beat him, and I know that you know, if we had a longer fight, I could have knocked him out. But I guess we were given 12 rounds, so obviously it was a better amount of the day. But I think that loss was a bit hard because I know I can beat him and I know what I can do.
You were in New York to announce your signing with Matchroom recently, right before the Joshua Ruiz fight. You must have been asked like 500 times, how does Andy Ruiz win? Because you're the common opponent with those two guys. But as you were answering those, did you really believe that Andy Ruiz could do what he did in that last fight?
I believed that he had the ability to beat Joshua. I didn't think he'll beat him like that. And so as you know, as a spectator and a heavyweight, I was surprised myself in how the fashion that he finished him with, you know, he knocked him down, what, four times? And so it was a shock for everyone. But we knew that he had the ability to beat him, but not like that.
What surprised you about, you know, watching what he did? Just the, I mean, did he show something in that fight that you didn't see when you went 12 rounds with him?
Yeah, I guess I was focused more on dodging and weaving and not getting hit. And I don't think I was aggressive enough. Whereas Andy Ruiz, in this case, he was very aggressive. You know, he took three punches and he gave back 5, 6, 7, 8. And so he took a punch to give a punch. Obviously, I didn't want to get hit. You know, boxing is about hitting and not getting hit. And I think I focused on not getting hit too much.
Does that make, when you watch something like that happen, do you look back and like, man, I could have done that.
Yeah, look at it and you're like, I wish that was me in there at that time.
So what, as you're now aligned with Matchroom, first fight in a multi-fight deal, what's the plan for you over the next year or so?
We've had a slow start to the beginning of this year, and now we've signed with Matchroom. We want to keep busy. You know, if we can fit in three fights before this year finishes, we will. And we want to keep busy until we become champion of the world again, or unified champion of the world.
So you want to fight twice this year? Is that before
I want to fight
three times this year.
If I can fit it in. I'd love to. You know, when you're in the ring, you're working on your craft, gaining more experience, and just gaining more confidence.
Was, as you were making the decision to kind of make change in your career, was being more of a U.S.-based fighter something that you were interested in specifically?
Very interested, because we've, you know, like I said, Duke Evans did a great job on that side of the world. You know, we conquered sort of New Zealand and Australia and all the Pacific Islands. And then we moved over to the UK, still with Duke, and then we were able to establish a name for ourselves there. And then I think the only other market was the U.S., and the U.S. is a massive market. And there's not one sort of one heavyweight that everyone in the U.S. sort of looks at and goes, okay, that's our fighter or that's our champion. It's still very open.
And you're based, your training camp's based, we were talking before, out in Vegas.
Out in Vegas.
How's that work for you? Do you like the operating out of Vegas?
I like Vegas because obviously my coach, Kevin Barry, lives there. We have a great setup that works for us. It's elevated. You know, it's hot. I like training in the heat, even though I don't like being in the heat during the day. But when we're, you know, in the gym, we don't really turn on an aircon because, you know, I like training in the heat, sweating off all that, not as much fat as before, but a little bit.
How do you avoid the trappings of Vegas?
We have a great setup where we're not really close to the Strip. You know, the Strip is a busy place where everyone goes to have a holiday and party, whereas we're sort of in the suburbs that are quite, you know, family-oriented, quiet, and we can focus on what we have to do.
As you're talking about staying busy, are you going to be more selective, do you think, with who you fight in this, like say this calendar year, as you kind of try to rebuild a little bit after the two losses?
I think that's the goal, be a bit more selective, but ultimately, you know, fight those guys that I've mentioned that are in the stable, you know, and I want to avenge the losses that I've had, you know. I want to fight Dillian White again, I want to fight Joshua again, but as a team, we know that we have to sort of take the right steps to get there.
What does Eddie tell you about a timetable for those types of fights, the two losses that, you know, Joshua, I'm sure you'd love to get another crack at some point once his business is settled with Andy Ruiz, but does Eddie say like a year, more than that? What does he say when it comes to White and Joshua?
We haven't really discussed the how long it'll take, but I guess, you know, in boxing, anything can happen, right? And then you may be given an opportunity, you know, you may think it may take 2 years, but a year later, you're given the opportunity, so you just have to be prepared all the time.
A lot of people watched your fight against Anthony Joshua. As they watch and look forward to this one and the ones to come, will they see a different fighter in Joseph Parker?
A very different fighter. You know, back then, you know, I think I put on a bit more muscle, hopefully. I think so. And more aggressive. I know what I want, and I want to knock people out. You know, I've gone the distance a lot of times, and, you know, I know my fitness is good. And I can go the distance anytime, but now if I want to establish a name for myself here, I need to win in spectacular fashion, and I need to take care of business as fast as I can.
Does that mean taking more chances sometimes?
Taking more chances, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think as a fighter, you know, I was, you know, a bit cautious, but now there's no time to be cautious. You just got to take, you know, risk. You know, take a few risks to get the reward. Mm-hmm.
The mental aspect of losing. I mean, you'd been undefeated prior to the Joshua fight. Is that hard? The mental part of it to kind of be like, all right, man, I just lost. I lost my title. Like, how does that affect you?
You know, losing. No one wants to lose. Mm-hmm. But I lost to, you know, I did everything I could at that time to be prepared for that fight, and I lost to the better man. And after two losses, you know, now I know that there's, I don't have a chance to lose again, otherwise I'll be further down the ladder. Mm-hmm. So mentally, I'm in a place where every fighter that I fight with, I just want to knock them out and get to the top as soon as I can.
Is everything for you now going to be, I mean, what be U.S.-based stuff, be U.S.-based fights? You built quite the following back in New Zealand. Like, you've got a really strong fan base there. What's your plan there as far as fighting back at home at some point?
At the moment, like you mentioned, we're focused now on the U.S., and I think the U.K. market is where it's at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, we always love fighting back home, but it's just, at the moment, a bit too small. Maybe at the end of my career, I'll take a fight back there in New Zealand or Samoa. Who knows what can happen. But at the moment, we're going to focus on this side of the world, and we're going to try and dominate.
Mm-hmm. If you got Joshua again this time next year, how different a fight would it be?
It'd be a very different fight. I'll watch Andy Ruiz's fight and sort of take a little bit of a lesson from his fight and try and, you know, obviously he sort of showed the blueprint of beating Joshua. So aggressive, throwing punches and combinations and aiming for that temple.
Mm-hmm. Was that, I mean, everybody talks about the all the knockdowns, but it really was that temple shot, wasn't it?
It was a temple shot that rocked him in the beginning and he never recovered. Mm-hmm. And you can see in his eyes, even though he was on and a ref was counting, his eyes never recovered.
Mm-hmm. How would you, for people to listen that don't know what that feels like, how would you describe what, you know, what happened when you hit that spot?
Well, obviously, with the Dillian White fight, I got headbutted in the head and I never recovered from that as well. So I know what he went through. Mm-hmm. The only difference is I was able to finish the fight, you know, and finish 12 rounds, whereas Andy Ruiz's pressure, you know, when you get hit like that, you can't really keep him off, you know, aggressive little fighter like him.
Do you lose your senses in that moment? I mean, what's the
you sort of lose your senses, sort of you lose, you're not really, you know, you sort of forgot the plan, you know, and we saw, you know, in the corner, he came back and he asked his coach many times, what did he catch me with, you know, and this is a different round. So obviously he still wasn't aware of what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. Joe, looking forward to seeing you fight Saturday night. Alex Leopold live on DAZN. Welcome back to fighting in the U.S., man, and looking forward to a bunch of them.
Thank you.